Welcome to Alles ist Film, the podcast of the DFF. My name is Frauke Hass. In our podcast series in English, I'm talking today with DFF director Alan Harrington about her ideas and visions for the DFF in the coming years.
Hello, Frauke.
Hello.
Happy to be here in my office with you, in person.
Yes, hi Alan. You've been the director of the DFF for more than 2.5 years now. At the beginning of January 2018, the DFF was not even called DFF yet. That already gives a first indication of the dynamics of the past 2 years. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about it.
Okay, so yes, I arrived in January of 2018, and I came from the US, from Los Angeles, and I had been at the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences and the Academy Museum for quite a long time. And I'd been able to collaborate with the colleagues that were here in Frankfurt at the Film Institute and the Film Museum on many projects, on screenings and on exhibitions and loans, sharing collections both ways, things coming to Frankfurt, things coming to Los Angeles, some big joint projects. And one of the things I really always noticed is that so many people, whether they were members of the public, the audiences, or even the staff, but certainly the international colleagues, all knew one part of this institution, but they didn't know the whole institution. They didn't really understand how big it was and the scope of it and all of the things that it accomplishes. And so to me, coming in from the outside, I would say, it was a very natural thing for me to think about how could we really talk about who the institution is and what it does. We did a visitor survey when I first arrived, and we discovered that people knew this building by many different names. And part of that has to do with the history of the institution having been a merger, essentially, of the Deutsches Institut für Filmkunde, which was born in Wiesbaden in 1949, the Film Museum, the Deutsches Film Museum, which sometimes was called the Frankfurt Film Museum, born here in Frankfurt in 1984, the Kommunales Kino of Frankfurt, which is maybe from the early 70s, that became the heart of the house, became the cinema program here. And so it seemed logical to just really start with a big overview and say, how does this organization operate? How does it talk about itself? And how does the staff understand its relationship to the institution? So we got together, as I mentioned, we did visitor surveys, but we also had working groups internally of people from all the different parts of the house. And I'll talk a little bit more about the scope of it. But we really did try to bring together people from different teams who maybe hadn't worked together before. Because there are numerous locations spread across the region of Hessen, two big cities, Frankfurt and Wiesbaden, it really did seem that sometimes colleagues didn't know each other or know what everybody else was doing on a regular basis. And so we did at the table sit down and say, how do you view what you're doing? How do you view your day-to-day work, your relationship to our central responsibilities? How can we come up with some terminology that does lead us to a clear, consistent message that everybody can share? And I think you, Frauke, as the head of the press department and having to do a variety of press releases for a lot of different kinds of activities, you know, this was maybe even always a struggle for you a little bit. How do you consistently present the institution, you know, when there's different logos and there's different sets of initials and all these different things? So I felt also it was a great way to start here with me getting to know the team members that I hadn't worked with in the past, because I could really learn what were their priorities by getting them to the table and having people say, you know, which is it? Is it an institute? Is it a museum? Is it a center? Is it a experience? Like, you know, how, what is the core content that we're here to create and to preserve and to share? And so that's where we got to both the mission statement and the rebranding. And the mission statement, I think, really helped us define ourselves as a global institution with international partners, but with local responsibility to our city, to our state, to our country, and also to a very diverse population that's here in Frankfurt and also throughout the region and the country. And it may not always be something people realize that, you know, Frankfurt does have people here from, you know, 180 countries and a lot of different language groups, a lot of different cultural traditions. And we want to be welcoming to all of them. So this was, you know, a great opportunity, again, to clarify our mission, come up with a unified name for the institution, and we chose DFF, Deutsches Film Institute and Film Museum, keeping the institute and the museum together, but giving them their own identities because they had strong histories, each of those brands, I would say. But it also gave us a chance to do a search for a really strong graphic design company, and to do a new website and to launch everything all together, which we did after my first year. In February of 2019, I think at the Berlinale, we actually launched our new corporate identity. And ever since then, we've been able to build on it when we have new projects or projects that need some kind of stronger visual connection to the house in their printed materials, in their trailers, in their websites. We are now really operating, I think, as a more cohesive institution because we went through this process.
Yes, and I remember that at the beginning, after your inaugural visits, you kept on telling us how amazed everyone was how big the DFF really is, isn't it?
Yeah, and this is, again, another thing coming from the outside that I could maybe bring people's attention to, and it wasn't maybe something that had been remarked upon or noticed as much by the previous director, because she had actually been the person who brought these two institutions together. And she was, you know, German and coming from Frankfurt region here. So when I came many years ago for an exhibition we did on the history of the Academy Awards, we had an Oscars exhibition called And the Oscars Goes To. And I came to help present that exhibition. And I really only saw the museum. And when I came during the interview process for the job, I went for the first time to the non-film archive and to the film archive and to the technology archive and met with people running the different film festivals. So when I was visiting all of the different locations, I discovered there's actually 7 locations for this institution, because everything doesn't fit under one roof. Some people look at the Film Museum building and think everyone's here, but in fact we're not. And there's 2 offsite offices for the film festivals. There is the text archive at the Dan Bay at the National Library here. There is another location for our archive and study center, another for the equipment archive for the technology history. The film archive is located in Wiesbaden, and that is where, you know, a lot of the digitization work and the film distribution actually runs out of. And there's just really a lot of people working here. There's about 200 people. You know, many of them are working at the festivals or coming in as freelancers for the film education department. But really, all year round, staff is about 130 or 40 people. So when you look at the scope of it and the impact of it, again, it was very important to come up with a unifying message and one name, you know, because some people knew us as DIFF or DFM or on and on and on. The other message is that, you know, we're really taking on national responsibility for film heritage in Germany. And if you think of the Cinémathèque Française or the British Film Institute or the Library of Congress in the US, this institution is on a par with that. And the one significant difference I would say is that in Germany, because of the history of the federal states and the decision essentially to spread the responsibility of cultural heritage across the different states, there actually is not one centralized national film archive. There is something called the Kinematheksverbund, and there are three main members. We are one of them, the DFF, Deutsches Film Institute Film Museum. The others are the SDK, the Stiftung Deutsche Kinemathek, in Berlin, and the Bundesarchiv. And so we three actually operate very closely together. We work together all the time. We regularly meet. And we are overall responsible for preserving the German film heritage. So we archive, we do an awful lot of inventory and database and record keeping. We actually, as the DFF, publish Filmportal.de, which is the definitive database online of German film credits, with now maybe about 150,000 film titles and well over 200,000 film personalities with biographies. We're starting to embed film clips. We actually work closely also with these partners on film digitization and preservation and screening programs. And there are associated members all throughout Germany, a number of other film heritage institutions that do their own preservation, that have collections, that are part of this larger association, this larger Verein, I would say. So these are facts that I think aren't as widely known about our institution. Others are, of course, that we are cooperating on a European level for a lot of database projects, a lot of online portals, things like the European Film Gateway or the iMedia Cities platform, where we associate ourselves with other European archives and actually do multilingual projects across the continent. And these have really inspired and provided a broad range of archives the opportunity to share their collections online, and then to create educational materials. We're a significant leader in the area of film education in Europe as well as in Germany, and a lot of the curriculum and the programs that we've developed, either through these European partnerships or in a local and regional way, have become models for a lot of different cultural heritage organizations and a lot of different school groups and school systems, I would say, even are starting to look at the way that we teach film education, going from the youngest visitors, the 4 through 6 year olds in the kindergartens, all the way through the master's degree program that we have. And our master's degree program that we present in concert with the Goethe University here in Frankfurt has actually now been exported in a way. We have now got partners in Nigeria, and their National Film Archive and the university in Jos, Nigeria, have adopted our methodology and our curriculum, and we are helping to train their teachers, their professors, and their archivists in our methodology so that they can then train the students. So there's really a lot of broad reach and impact that is across countries, across cultures, across languages, but always with this central purpose to live up to the mission statement that we articulated a few years ago. We are essentially building the bridge between the analog past and the digital future. And our responsibility is in every format, whether it be education, film festivals, exhibitions, touring exhibitions, online exhibitions and online content, digitization, analog or digital film distribution, on and on and on. All of these different tools that we use help us to do just that, to preserve film, even recent film, show it to audiences, and inspire the next generation to care for it and love it the way that we do.
As a film heritage institution, the interesting question is, what are the current challenges a film heritage institution like us is facing?
Well, it's an interesting time talking to you from the 5-month mark of the COVID pandemic. We actually closed the museum in mid-March through the beginning of May, and our cinema was closed mid-March until June, actually. But we were confronting these issues before the pandemic. It was quite an interesting opportunity this past year. The FIAF Congress, the International Federation of Film Archives, was publishing an edition of their Journal of Film Preservation for April 2020, and it was meant to be the issue distributed at the annual conference, and it was about challenges to the film archives, and we were asked to contribute an article because last year was the 70-year anniversary of the original Film Institute, and we had the opportunity to go through all of these different projects that we do and our approach to making sure that we stay relevant. And we wrote an article, and a number of the department heads here contributed to this because we have so many areas of expertise that we actually ask the experts within our own team to write the part of the story about their area of responsibility. So we were looking at what is the reality now of a film cultural heritage organization in the era of rapid changes in technology, rapid changes in film delivery modes, the audience's expectations, the economics of the film business. All of this was really front and center. People were constantly asking me two big questions. You know, do people still care about cinema in the age of Netflix? Is it still relevant to go to a movie theater? Will the type of films being made change because of streaming? And then the other question is, you know, how do you get young people to be interested in film, and how does film survive? And I think these are interconnected questions, and the answer is very interconnected. So we addressed this. We addressed our strategies in the article for the FIAF Journal to talk about, you know, how do we energize our communities? How do we become a really open house that looks broadly to the audiences that we have and to offer diverse content and to be open-minded and respectful of a broad variety of types of creation and types of movie making, and to always prioritize the in-person experience and to have our theaters running film in the cinema with an audience, to have in-person opportunities for learning and hands-on workshops where students are handling film, where in our master's degree program, the students are spending time in the projection booth and the film archive. I mean, these are the ways that film culture is transmitted and made exciting and lives on. And then the pandemic hit, and we couldn't do any of those things in person. Everything became virtual. We went to home office. Our building was closed. You know, we had to suspend a lot of our activities. And it was fascinating to see our team really pivot and be super, super creative, led by the press team, actually, to build on this great new website that we had that had been really well thought out. You know, the pathways on the website were very clear, the categories and the navigation tools were really clear, the graphics were really clear. And so it was a fantastic architecture to begin to expand what we were already doing. We had some online exhibitions, we offered even more. We had some virtual visits to our galleries, we offered even more. We filmed walkthroughs in our galleries, we put content from our existing multimedia guide online. This podcast series basically was born at this time. We did a lot of social media competitions, a lot more different kinds of access to our collections and behind the scenes and streaming tips and all of these kind of things. And they were pushed out with Facebook and Instagram and Twitter. And it turned the institution into a big player in the virtual world, I would say. We gained a lot of followers, we had a lot of impact, and that was very, very quickly after the pandemic. And then we had to decide what to do as we reopened with safety procedures and also how to offer live content again with limited capacity, because right now we can only sell 30 seats in our cinema. And so for our Go East Festival, we ended up with a hybrid model. And I think that this is kind of a good example of how we'll probably have to operate going forward. And it also has great advantages. Once we were able to invest in some video conferencing technology and, you know, really push our IT team pretty hard to come up with some, again, creative solutions, we were able to take a festival that's always only been in person, and some components were offered online, the opening and closing ceremonies, the press conference. There was a virtual reality competition, which we've done in the past, but now visitors could experience it online, and we created a virtual reality version of the Caligari Theater that visitors could enter and explore. We did present the competition films in a streaming format where people could just purchase the downloads, but we partnered with X-Ground, which is another festival that takes place in Wiesbaden, in November, and they will actually run the competition films in person. So the films are getting two plays, essentially, one virtual and one in person. We moved our symposium to the end of July in the hopes that conditions would allow us to present it. We did present it, again, only with 30 people in the cinema, but it was a virtual presentation also. And people can view everything online, all of the panels. We had a mix of in-person and visiting people online, coming in on the cinema screen, and everybody was able to share screens and to speak and ask questions, and the dialogue wasn't interrupted by the fact that, you know, one person may have been in Bucharest and another was in Frankfurt. So these kind of solutions now are impacting how we do everything. Our upcoming Lucas Young Audiences Festival will be a hybrid. The films will all screen once in the cinema, but everything else will also go to online, and teachers can screen the films in their classrooms. Discussions with the filmmakers from around the globe can be virtual and happen in the classrooms. And people who are unaffiliated with schools and not in Frankfurt can watch the movies. They can download these films also. So festivals that were very much based in our cities now are also reaching audiences that are throughout Germany, and in the situation of Go East, international, because that festival has films from 30 different countries, and many of those countries had people participating virtually and watching the films. Our education department now is responding to teachers' demands for online learning content, because it's really a lot of pressure to teach by a Zoom, you know, on a regular basis. It's just too much. And, you know, we have now invested in a Moodle and Zoom, you know, licenses, and we are presenting a lot of our usual types of in-person curriculum virtually. We also have a film mobile. This goes physically to schools, but also the content is going virtual. We're about to launch our mini film club DVD set, actually, that has the films and the curriculum. And that's something that schools can actually obtain and use in their own locations. So we're trying to be a hybrid organization now. And I think this will be the future, because audiences now have an expectation of being able to access content even if they aren't in the city where the content is generated.
So, now let's have a look to the future. What exciting projects can visitors look forward to?
Well, as I mentioned, we have to keep working in parallel tracks. We have to keep working in the physical world and the analog world. We're out there driving trucks to film depots and collecting big film collections. We still have, you know, more than 25,000 films on film, and we're collecting those and taking them to our archive. And we're involved in this very large national digitization initiative, which is, you know, every year 10 million euros being spent over the next 10 years to preserve German film and to get those digitized copies into cinemas through our film distribution department. So we're one of the other Kinematheksverbund archives that are participating in this project. We are still collecting physical materials. As many of you know, we opened our new archive and study center location last year in the heart of Frankfurt, and it anchors our research cluster, is what I'm calling it, in the heart of Frankfurt, alongside Goethe University. We have this new location, which we call the Fassbender Center, and it is right between the gates of the university and the DNB, the National Library, where we have our text archive. And so in a small area, we have a lot of educational possibilities for in-person research, for evening programs, for film and book conversations and lectures and programming. And the master's degree program is spending a lot of time there doing teaching and also research. And we are gaining new collections on a regular basis. We did acquire, as the name might indicate, a very special collection last year, Rainer Werner Fassbinder's Career Papers. We are in the process of acquiring some other very exciting new collections, which will be the subject of future podcast topics when we're allowed to talk about it publicly. We are really also expanding the notion of the kinds of collections that we'll bring in. We usually focus on filmmaker collections and materials that are generated in the process of making movies, whether they be costumes or props or scripts, production designs, all these kind of categories, and also marketing materials like film posters. But we're starting to expand into collecting materials around film scholarship and people who are writing about film culture and film studies and the science of film. So we hope to also be sharing more information about that new collection coming soon. And then we are exploding in the digital realm. We already have many, many staff members working on our digital platforms, whether that be Film Portal, our European platforms, our internal databases, and a lot of these other kinds of strategies that we need to be able to manage our collection. But we're finding exciting new ways to use the collection. We have a new project that will launch online in November called Ritzom Filmgeschichte, and it's actually going to be a portal that looks at the grammar of film and opening sequences and title credit sequences and allows visitors to explore hundreds of different examples that are connected by different types of structuring devices. And it's a really unique way of taking something that might have been a fascinating book at one point and actually actualizing it online with moving image examples that the visitors can travel through. We also have another wonderful project that was funded by the Kulturstiftung des Bundes here, and they have a digital fund for creative innovation, I would say. And we got a grant to partner with a colleague institution, the Australian Centre for the Moving Image, which is located in Melbourne, Australia. They are renovating their galleries. They're opening a new experience for their visitors in real time in the museum. But they also have a creative new digital overlay that they're calling the Constellation. And the Constellation is a set of curated pathways and references and film clips and collections records and all kinds of unique material that are so diverse and special, but not the kind of thing that can be displayed in the galleries, usually because of space. And visitors will be given a collecting device, which they're calling the lens, and they can pass through the galleries and digitally collect all of the kinds of material they're interested in and visit at home with all of these materials and these different kinds of concepts. And so it's kind of expanding the footprint of the gallery and offering an after visit experience. And so we're going to expand that. Our project is called Constellation 2.0, and we will be creating an overlay in our own galleries. We don't get a bigger building. We have to make the building bigger virtually. And this involves really also digitizing more objects from our collection, creating new interfaces in the gallery, and then a collecting device. And this will be a four-year project, but we think it will result in an exciting new software that will be available on an open source basis to museums globally, as well as in Germany. But it will also really make our galleries more dynamic and more personalized for the visitor. And then just to kind of go back to one of the things I talked about at the beginning about knowing our visitors, doing visitor surveys, looking at the demographics of our city, the language groups, the different types of audiences that we hope to attract, different age groups, also visitors, tourists, whether they be German, European, or from other continents. We are now really expanding our diversity approach, and it also goes towards accessibility. We've gotten some really helpful grants from Commerzbank to look at how we work with visitors who have different challenges, mobility challenges, sight and hearing differences, any kind of learning differences, and we're trying to expand the accessibility of our galleries for this. Also, as I mentioned, the diversity of our visitors in terms of national origin or language, with many more language materials being printed in the house and also more languages available online. We did also get another wonderful grant from the Kulturstiftung des Bundes for a program called 360 Degrees, and they embed two change agents in our house for the next 4 years. And these two people are looking not only at welcoming new audiences, but partnering with local groups, especially cultural organizations, also looking at the way we staff. How do we advertise our jobs? How do we train our staff to be open and sensitive to audiences' differences? How do we make sure that what we offer in the galleries and in the cinema is as diverse and welcoming as possible? And we're very far ahead in the cinema. I can proudly say that in the years I've been here, I've been so amazed. We have over 900 film programs a year on a typical year. Maybe if less this year, but we'll get back to normal in 2021, I think. And the films come from everywhere. We have the oldest African film festival in Germany. We have a Japanese festival, and many other national cinemas are featured. Wonderful multilingual programs, and we always screen films in the language that the filmmakers work in. We do not show dubbed versions here. Of course, we look for German subtitles to offer whenever possible. If that's not possible, we offer English language subtitles, but we really want the visitors to see global cinema in the language of the actors and the language of the directors. So this is, just sort of one of our principles, and we are looking, as I mentioned, to how do we have more of this content available online. All of the filmmaker visits that happen in the house are filmed, and they're being posted on our YouTube channel. I think this will become a big, big resource in the future for people interested in cinema, for researchers and historians, but also just the public, especially if they are interested in hearing from a director and they're not able, because of the pandemic, to physically come to our cinema these days. So we are feeling very optimistic about the future. There's still a long way to go, of course, before everyone is vaccinated and we have freedom of movement and we can get back to having the numbers of people that we're used to in our house. But we're optimistic. I mean, one of our recent years, I think 2019, we had over 200,000 visitors in the film museum. We had over 50,000 visitors in our cinema. And we had about more than 300,000 attending our touring programs, whether it be Schulkinowochen, which is a cinema program that happens throughout Hessen, with 75,000 school children going to over 80 cinemas in the region, or our touring exhibitions. We've had very, very successful large touring exhibitions over the years. So right now we're a hybrid organization. Someday we'll get back to these big numbers in person, and hopefully we keep our digital visitors and grow that group of people as well. And so our connections around the world stay dynamic. And I think we have the right team in place. We are very, very optimistic, I would say. And I would leave it at that, in future podcasts, I'll talk about some of these new acquisitions and some of the new grants and initiatives and programs. But for now, I would say that we're, a healthy, dynamic, talented group of people. I'm proud of this team. And I think that we look forward to connecting with you as a listener as an online visitor and an in-person visitor, I hope, in the future.
So thank you very much. That was my conversation with Ellen Harrington, director of the DFF. Thanks for listening. Please tell us if you like this podcast and which topics around the DFF you are interested in.